You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Guccifer 2.0, sock puppets, and fancy bears, oh my. Insights on machine learning, new revelations about Stingray surveillance devices, and Snowden lands in U.S. theaters. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. The bears are busy again, or at least Fancy Bear is. More documents swiped from the U.S. Democratic Party were released yesterday at the Future of Cybersecurity Europe conference in London. The documents were released with the appropriate stagecraft of hacktivist anonymity. The hacker or hackers addressed the conference, Russia Today reports, through, quote, an unknown and remote transcriber, end quote. The 500 megabytes or so seem to contain mostly information about party donors and some information going back to vice presidential candidate Kaine's tenure at the head of the DNC. We should also note that the hackers continue to represent themselves as Guccifer 2.0, which most people outside of Russia Today regard as a sock puppet for Fancy Bear. In any case, Guccifer 2.0 is quite miffed that people think he's or she's really Russian intelligence. It seems unfair to him or her that the Russian organs are getting credit for all that great stuff. So, he or she is angry. But, quote, then I realize the deeper they go this way, the safer I am, end quote. That's what Guccifer 2.0 concluded with a smiley emoticon. Fancy Bear also seems behind the doxing of the World Anti-Doping Authority, or WADA. Medical records and drug test results for various Western athletes were released. Russian authorities have been displeased by the disqualifications of Olympians for alleged doping and by the general cloud of suspicion that hung over its team in Rio this summer. The documents released don't appear to show anything terribly scandalous, but the hack was done in a clear spirit of you too. ABC News, in reporting on the incident, says the threat actor calls itself Fancy Bear, but that's not exactly true. CrowdStrike called them that, and the name stuck. Fancy Bear probably calls itself the GRU, only in Russian, GRU, like that. U.S. officials continue to worry about election hacking and appear, we heard at the Billington summit yesterday, to have settled on a policy of offering help to state and local authorities without designating voting critical infrastructure or federalizing elections. There's a new threat at the ATM, Krebs on Security reports that the U.S. Secret Service is warning people against periscope skimming, a new technique in which a specialized probe connects to an ATM's internal circuit board and accesses card data from there. Machine learning continues to grow in importance as a tool for detecting and mitigating cyber attacks. We checked in with Raj Kapalakrishna, chief software architect at Acalvio, a company that offers advanced threat defense, for his take on machine learning.
So machine learning is basically, various algorithms that have been designed over the last 20 years, which help us solve sort of very complex problems. And today they're being largely used, for example, in recommendation engines when you buy something on Amazon. It looks at people's behavior and purchase patterns, who has bought this item before, and gives you a recommendation. That's an example of a machine learning algorithm.
And how does this extend to the cybersecurity realm?
So the thing is that in the cybersecurity world, for the last couple of decades, most of the solutions in the market were basically made up of rules, where you can set some policy, say, don't allow this, block this, whitelist, negative list, blacklist, things like that, right? So there's too much of work for humans. And it was very error-prone and very slow. And it only went back to what you know, as opposed to looking at what you don't know about. So machine learning is now being widely started being adopted in the security domain, cybersecurity domain. You don't need a human being telling it a rule. It can actually derive and make its own rules as the things move along.
With machine learning, can the machines actually come back to the user with new creative insights?
Absolutely. So it can take a lot of different data and give back feedback and saying, this is something I've never seen, for example, anomaly detection. So they look for behavior of a human being, for example, on a machine. This machine, typically this laptop or server, tends to send this amount of data on a typical day or a typical hour in the day. And now they start baselining that. And now the machine learning algorithms can start learning that automatically when they watch the data, let's say, for a month or a few weeks. And now they exactly know what is normal on Monday morning at 9 a.m. on this laptop or on this network or on this website. So they know. So something looks different, they immediately can flag it and tell you, this is anomalous, this is unusual, I didn't expect this. So do you want me to do something about it? So those are all examples of how people have started using it.
So can the bad guys use machine learning to streamline their operations as well?
Absolutely. And machine learning is, of course, requires a lot of theoretical knowledge. So in my team, for example, we have people with PhDs who have done just that in machine learning and data science for 7 years. And so it's a lot of math involved and a lot of and then there is domain knowledge. So if they're willing to invest the time, certainly they can.
Have there been any examples of that happening that we've seen out in the wild?
There's been a little bit of that, for example, they try to learn what the attackers are looking for in reputation services, and they're trying to confuse it. But not a whole lot. And it's still early days in the security space. I think just only four or five in the parts of the security space started using the machine learning because it's such a difficult domain, but very powerful.
That's Raj Kapalakrishna from Acalvio. In the U.S., Congress is again taking up surveillance legislation. The intelligence community, including the NSA director, this week testified in favor of strong encryption. The U.S. government is also mulling some reorganizations to its cyber agencies, among them the possible separation of NSA and Cyber Command. Senator McCain says he'll block that particular reorg. And the possible separation of NSA itself from the Department of Defense. Defense Secretary Carter is said to be considering if NSA might not be better off as an independent agency like the CIA. Finally, Edward Snowden says he thinks he deserves a pardon, that his leaks did a lot of good. President Obama appears to dissent from this view strongly, but then he might not have seen Oliver Stone's eponymous Snowden flick. Wired has, however, and they've got a review. Read the whole thing if you're not averse to spoilers, and in this case, why would you be? The reviewer suggests the film has a clear point of view. It, quote, takes about 90 minutes to bleach out the last shades of gray in its black and white biopic, end quote. So, not as complex a narrative as, say, Captain America Civil War, or so the kids tell us. On the other hand, the kids would like City Escape from Sonic the Hedgehog to become the national anthem. Oh, these kids today.
And And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He's a senior law and policy analyst at the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Ben, you and I have been keeping our eye on these so-called Stingray devices, these cell phone tower simulators. There's been a couple of developments lately when it comes to Stingrays. Bring us up to date.
Sure. So last month, a group of civil rights leaders here in Baltimore complained to the Federal Communications Commission over the Baltimore police's use of this technology known as Stingray. And we've talked about this before, but these are cell site simulators. So law enforcement sets up devices that are able to trick phones into revealing location identifying information. The use has been particularly widespread in Baltimore City, and I think because of the potential that it's being used disproportionately in some minority neighborhoods, and because it's actually led to a significant number of arrests, there has been that concern. So we're not exactly sure how the FCC is going to come down on this. The case is still pending, so the FCC hasn't commented necessarily, but this is an interesting development in civil rights groups trying to use the regulatory process to perhaps curb the use of this this law enforcement tool. And then the other recent development I think is perhaps even more interesting. Earlier this week, there was a manual released from one of the manufacturers that produces these so-called Stingray devices, and that's the Harris Corporation.
And this is an operator's manual?
This is an operator's manual, that's correct. And it was revealed... parts of the program had been revealed under previous Freedom of Information Act requests, but there had been a lot of redacted information. But this week, the manual was leaked to a website known as The Intercept. That's the website you may be familiar with that's run by Glenn Greenwald, who was, or at least run in large part by Glenn Greenwald, who was at the center of the Snowden disclosures. And it revealed some pretty staggering information about how these Stingray devices work. They're particularly powerful. I mean, one of the things that was revealed is that the device can impersonate up to 4 cell towers at once, and it can monitor up to 4 provider networks simultaneously, and can also monitor 2G, 3G, 4G communications. And I'm sure, as the technology changes and we get to 5G, this technology will adapt as well. Based on the manuals provided and some of the analysis I've seen, it looks like it's relatively easy for law enforcement to use on a wide scale without any particularized technological knowledge. And that presents significant civil liberties concerns. We saw a Maryland court earlier this year say that people should have a reasonable expectation in privacy that their location is not going to be revealed to these cell site simulators, meaning that law enforcement is going to need a warrant potentially to do these types of searches. The highest court in Maryland hasn't yet come down on it, but I think it's going to be crucial that there's some finality to this decision now that we know the scope of information that can be retrieved from these devices and how easy they are for law enforcement to employ.
I guess what always puzzled me about this is that, you know, presumably any cell phone and any cell service provider needs a license to set up their towers. And so you would think even law enforcement wouldn't be allowed to, you know, set up a rogue transmitter receiving device that the sole purpose of it is interfering with the flow of information on a regular cell tower.
Right. So there is this sort of interesting principle, and I think this cuts across various areas of cyber law. The government is sort of its own entity. And some of the tactics that are legal in the private sector are and that require licenses in the private sector, the government is often immune from those if they're using them for uniquely government functions, such as, law enforcement or domestic security or international surveillance. So I think that's something the FCC is going to have to grapple with. Is this a unique circumstance where the government needs a unique capability and, you know, something like revealing that they're getting these types of licenses might hinder their law enforcement services? Or do they not get a pass, and do they have to go through the same rigorous process that all the other cellular providers have to go through? So I think this is an open question for the FCC.
All right, Ben Yellen, we will continue to keep an eye on it. Thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.